This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Welcome to Off the Looking Glass. I'm Kate Fagan.
I'm Jessica Smetana.
Jess, it's worldwide Off the Looking Glass today because we are going to go halfway across the globe. Most of the way across the globe.
Yeah, because I think if we went all the way, we'd be back where we are right now.
Yeah, it's always tricky. When you do a full 360, you always got that person.
Circles are crazy.
Yeah, that's a lot of thought and math for me. But we are going worldwide because we are going to chat with Meg Linehan, who is actually in New Zealand when we spoke to her. She might be in Australia by now, but she is bouncing between those two countries. And she's going to give us everything on the ground, mostly a coffee report, which will then lead into a soccer report. But I mean, we're all World Cup here, Jess.
We are. And in our defense, ESPN ran a U.S. women's national team coffee-related story. So I think it's fair for us to spend half of the conversation talking about coffee. But we should mention, we talked to her before the 0-0 draw against Portugal. Mm. So the U.S. women's national team has eked its way through the group stage by the slimmest of margins. Broke their
by the skin
record
of their teeth, we might say.
Yes. They had a long streak going back multiple World Cup cycles of not tying games in the drawing games in the first round. Yeah. That ended versus the Netherlands. So there's a lot of mixed emotions, mixed feelings, I think, among U.S. women's national team fans. But Kate, I think we're going to remain positive.
Yeah.
Meg she gave us a lot of context as to why this is not a super unfamiliar place for the team to be.
Yeah.
And we're going to hope that moving forward in the knockout stage, some of the pieces come together finally. Let's hope.
Yeah, let's use the phrase, since we are phrase users here at Off the Looking Glass, like they need to grow into this tournament. And Meg might even use that phrase. But you see this often in the world of soccer. A team that may not look good in the group stage, it makes a couple tweaks and all of a sudden they're looking smarter in the knockout round and then better and better. So, you know, we're not going to Carly Lloyd it is what we're saying, Jess, right?
Well, I'm not going to accuse anyone of like caring about other things more than soccer.
Right.
I don't think there's really a lack of desire among this group, right?
Yeah.
Do we think U.S. women's national team management is capable of making the changes? I'm not sure.
Okay.
But I do know that Canada's out. So at least we're just not out.
Yeah, we're not out yet. And again, I don't think smiling is always like an indication that you just don't give an F. Sometimes yawning and smiling can just be nervous reactions to big stage moments. So we're going to remain positive. Although, Jess, I heard a hint of doubt there. Spun back into a positive that we have not been eliminated. We're really spinning our wheels here on how we feel about this team.
I mean, I feel like if they won, I wouldn't be surprised, right?
Right.
But I do feel like I felt better before the tournament started than I do now.
Yeah.
However, I think in the spirit of one of Darren Rovell's most famous tweets, I feel bad for this country, but this is tremendous content. I feel great that this tournament is up for grabs right now, but I feel terrible that the U.S. women's national team hasn't blown the doors off in the group stage into the knockout round.
All right. Well, should we get you a perfectly executed flat white to make you feel a little bit better about where the U.S.
women... Yes. It always makes me feel better.
All Let's right. Do it. Let's do it. Let's go halfway to maybe full way around the globe and speak to The Athletic's Meg Linehan. Basically, we're taking Off the Looking Glass to Australia and New Zealand by having Meg on the show. So we're starting with the most important thing, which is coffee. And have you been to Australia yet? I know you're currently in New Zealand.
I have not. I leave in a little under a week to go to Sydney mostly okay. in theory. I have to go to Sydney no matter what, but Sydney is the plan, depending on how this group shakes out.
So I can't ask you to rank New Zealand versus Australia coffee yet, no, but like, give us yet. The lowdown so far on New Zealand.
I mean, the coffee culture here is just absolutely crazy. I mean, you generally cannot pass a block without a coffee shop. So what's also really cool is that they are just, in many places, these tiny little takeaway windows. So it's just like literally they've put a man in a box with an espresso machine with a window. And he's just like, here you go. Here you go.
Yes.
So it's just kind of everywhere. Although I will say they are not like us crazy Americans. They stop drinking coffee at a certain point. So like the coffee places do close down at like 2 or 3. So if you want a later coffee, you have to think about what you're doing. But yeah, the coffee here is great. Flat whites are the go-to really for everyone. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, last night I was at the New Zealand Philippines game here in Wellington, and my backpack did not make my flight. It made the next flight. So I was working without my jacket at the stadium. It is winter. It is brisk here. So I was like, let me go get a hot beverage. And they have just a full-on coffee cart at the stadium, and they take your coffee or like, cause it says barista coffee. And then it's just like, so a flat white. And she's like, okay. And it's full, like they have an espresso machine in a little truck, and they're like, yeah. Here you go. Yeah. It was amazing.
This really is the dream.
Yeah. And Jess, I was talking to Meg just before you hopped on, and Meg said that they also, like, when they steam the milk, they bop it on the, you know,
yeah,
the mark of like, a true well-steamed milk. I mean, this is the key thing people want to know about what's happening over there in the World Cup.
I mean, to be fair, you know, I've only really done 2015 on in some form. And I don't, like, in 2015, the only games I actually went to were in Montreal. And now as a Burlington, Vermont resident, Montreal is actually my closest major city. And we specifically go there for food. So I'm not trying to say, like, Montreal is a bad food city. But so far, like, and to be fair, again, I haven't been to Australia yet, but this is, like, easily winning food
really?
World Cup vibe for me. So, like, everybody is just, like, the group chats with the food photos are just, everybody is finding the most ridiculous stuff on the face of the planet. It's crazy. It's just, it's really good. So
have you done any Lord of the Rings themed activities yet?
One does not simply walk into Mordor.
No, I was supposed to go. And then the work days here have been, I've gotten about 6 hours off since I landed a week and a half ago.
Okay. Not enough time to tour Hobbiton. I got it.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's for the folks who are out at games in Hamilton. Generally, I was originally going to do a bus trip, and then instead I went to the New Zealand Philippines game.
The first World Cup win in their nation's history.
Which felt like the right decision, especially just with the Philippines getting that 1-0 upset. And yeah. Also the bizarre VAR decision that we got in that one. Like, there was a lot happening. So
the officiating has been kind of weird in this World Cup. Right?
Yeah, it's been really, like, both, we've gotten a million penalties, but also they're just letting some stuff go. Like, in that USA-Vietnam game, there was a full-on two-handed shove to the back that resulted in, I don't even remember who it was, like, maybe DeMello or someone, like, toppling over, and then nothing happened, and I was just like, oh, okay. That feels like a foul to me.
Yeah. What's the vibe on the ground in New Zealand? God, we're going to have to get you back on, Meg, too, to do the Australia vibe. Like, are people buying in, right? Is it like, how is the country's vibe?
I was in France for 2019 the whole time. And if you are not in the immediate vicinity of a stadium, you'd probably never know. It's not just Paris, right? Like, Paris is a major city. They obviously have other things going on. But here in New Zealand, at least, you walk off the plane in Auckland, and the doors slide open, and it's like you're being smacked in the face by the World Cup. Like, they have this whole installation thing where it's like they've built little stands for people waiting for international arrivals. Like, they've put down fake grass. Like, it feels like a real thing. And then you get downtown, and like, yes, there are obviously parts of town that aren't necessarily like in a true World Cup buzz. But first of all, the Americans are everywhere. Like, you can't. You can't go somewhere without hearing someone American. But, you know, there's this like World Cup bunting everywhere. The games are on at every single, like, if you walk at night and you look into a bar, the World Cup games are on, like, period. So it feels to me like, and I have heard some local folks here being like, oh, I don't know if we're doing enough. And I'm like, trust me, compared to previous tournaments, you guys are killing it. Like, you're absolutely killing it. So it just really does feel like a World Cup to me in a way that I have never experienced. They are very much in World Cup mode.
Then what was the energy like when they lost last night?
Yeah, the crowd was agitated, to say the least. Like, I mean, it was good because they really did have the back of the Ferns for that match. But obviously that VAR decision was wildly, wildly unpopular. But what was really interesting is there's a huge amount of Philippines fans in the stadium. So it was like when the Philippines scored, that place was rocking. Like, it was not a purely Ferns home crowd. There were so many people there rooting for the Philippines. So it was really cool just because you did get this kind of back and forth in the stadium. And I was at the Argentina-Italy game too. And there was this little clump of fans before the game started in this far section with drums having the time of their lives supporting Argentina. And by the end of the game, they had basically taken over two sections of the stadium. Like, everybody flocked to them. It was amazing. So we've seen, even if, you know, maybe it's not at the level of what we might expect, like, the fans are turning up. I think the average attendance across this tournament so far is up like 40, 50%, maybe. I mean, like, the average attendance for the first 10 games or so in France was like 17,000, and here it's above 30. Like, people are showing up for every game. And that's always a concern of, like, how are you going to get people to Argentina, Italy, right? In New Zealand. That game had 30,000. It was amazing. Like, the vibe, it was not a full stadium. It was not 42,000 or whatever. But that vibe was, like, honestly the best environment that I had been in so far. So, yeah, it's just, it's really cool to see, like, people have flown. Obviously, like, everybody has a flight to get here, but people have shown up and are having a blast. Like, it's just a great World Cup so far.
Yeah, it's hard to, like, I don't know, Jess, if you agree, like, here in the States, it's hard to, like, get your finger on the pulse of, like, how big the Women's World Cup is right now, because you've got the added hurdle of the times being almost impossible. And so you don't have, like, the gathering. The U.S.'s second game is still to be played, but I wanted, you have a little more finger on the pulse there in New Zealand, but, like, you're writing articles, you're more in the thick of it. Like, what in general, like, globally, have you been feeling about this World Cup? Because it's of the difficulty in, like, this time zone and all of that.
Yeah, I think there is a balance, right, of you need to put World Cups in places where it's going to grow the game, right? Like, it's who's the best host? How is it going to grow the game? And I think it is honestly really important to hit this corner of the world, right? Like, Australia is obviously, I think everybody knew Australia was going to take advantage of this moment, right? And they've also had all the storytelling leading into the tournament. Like, they have that full documentary around the Matildas. Like, they are ready and primed to just explode following a World Cup like this. New Zealand, I think everybody was really worried because it is a smaller country. There's fewer resources. And this team, before this tournament, had never won a World Cup game, right? Like, they have been in all of these tournaments. They'd never won a game. They'd drawn, but they'd never won. And then, so to have that opening game against their toughest opponent in Norway and to win.
Wilkinson makes a run. Open in the box. Play it across. Wilkinson, go! New Zealand leads!
It is already so clear what it is doing in terms of, like, getting people into women's football here. But then to expand, like, I think the time zones do present a challenge for the U.S., for Europe as well. But what we've seen, I think, from at least the viewership numbers is that they're still there, right? Like, 6 million people, I think, ish tuned into USA Vietnam, whether that was on Fox or Telemundo. So, like, the viewers are still going to be there. This is not going to be, like, the giant, big, record-breaking sort of number when you have the USA in the final in 2015 in a time zone that makes sense to us. Like, and I think everyone has to just kind of keep that in mind. But in terms of what we're seeing on the ground, and I think at least from the early numbers that I've seen from kind of like a global perspective, this is still going to feel like a win, even if it is challenging and people are waking up at, you know, like 3 a.m., 5 a.m., whatever it is to watch games, which is definitely like a pain, but it's been good over here.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What are some of the non-US thread storylines that you're paying attention to in New Zealand or Australia that maybe we haven't been able to watch because of the time difference or it's a little bit off of the radar of American fans?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm just kind of in Fern's land, so I've been like really paying attention to what New Zealand has been doing. But I also think Norway, Switzerland also had their other Group A game, and Norway has just kind of quietly, not even quietly, they've been imploding so far this tournament, right? Like they were extremely all over the place in Euros last summer. And so I think the hope was, okay, they're going to get it together for the World Cup. And then they lose to New Zealand in the opener. And then they have this very strange 0-0 draw with Ada Hegerberg walking off the field, potentially because of injury, tweeting that she said, you know, I tweaked a muscle and we just didn't want to risk anything. But there is this sense of like, something is not right over there, but we don't really know what it is. And I don't know if we will know what it is until after the tournament. So that's definitely something that I think everybody's just kind of looking at going like, okay, interesting. But, you know, beyond that, I think everybody's watching the debutantes. And for me, it has been kind of the CONCACAF teams have been hanging generally, right? Like you look at that England and Haiti game and Haiti, like that was a legit performance. And it was really funny because someone tweeted at me to be like, you tried to warn them. No one listened to you because I watched them play in Mexico last summer at CONCACAF qualifiers. They're a really good team. All these players play in France with professional teams. Like they're not going to roll over for England. And they're also going to bring, you know, what we affectionately refer to as CONCACAF energy, where it's chaotic and physical and you don't know what's going to happen in a game. And that's exactly how it played out. Jamaica too, holding France to that draw as well. So that's to me is the other really fun plot line of, you know, I'm not necessarily in near those games just because I am on U.S. Women's National Team duty, but watching CONCACAF teams kind of hold their own has been pretty enjoyable.
So as someone on U.S. National Team duty, how do you thread the needle of both being realistic about what the United States team is doing and having concerns for it, but also acknowledging like, they still won their opening game by 3-0. Maybe it wasn't 14-0, but you know, they came out looking solidly dominant over a team that they should have beaten by a few goals.
Yeah, I feel like actually it is. I feel great being over here because I feel like I'm so removed from the discourse over that one. So yeah. I can just kind of be like, okay, that's happening. I don't need to pay attention to it because I think for anyone who has been A, watching the U.S. women's national team, but B, paying attention to kind of the overall state of women's soccer, women's football in the world, like no one paying attention was expecting a 13-0 result against Vietnam, even though they were debutantes, right? Especially after the thing that should have clued everyone in is that they held Germany to a 2-1 result in their like warm-up game right before the tournament. And I think Vlaco has talked about this a lot. Like he's just like, we're not expecting a Thailand style opener, right? And to be fair, we saw it with Germany and Morocco, but even that was 6-0, right? And like Germany ran that game, but even they could not get it into double digits. So I feel like, and this is a good thing that those times are gone, right? Like, I don't think we will see a 13-0 result. And there were so many concerns about opening up the tournament to 32 teams, expanding the tournament. But then we have generally seen the debutantes handle the moment pretty well. Again, like, Morocco is kind of an outlier, but also they are facing the number two team in the world. Like, it is kind of a slight USA-Thailand situation. But from a US point of view, like, they got the job done. I feel like folks who are newer, who did not live through the suffering that was the 2015 World Cup, where they looked terrible for multiple games in a row and still won the thing. Like, ultimately, the mission is getting through the next game. Like, you get a win and you go on. That's it. And it almost starts to feel like in-game criticism doesn't add anything, because the clock resets every single time. So do I expect to see adjustments in the second game? Absolutely. Like, yes, from a technical staff point of view, like, obviously the clock doesn't really reset for them. There are adjustments. But from a outside narrative, like, first of all, none of them care. None of them care about it. It is truly about just advancing, winning and advancing. So, you know, 3-0 win, Sophia Smith involved in every single goal, 2 goals, 1 assist, Roosevelt and Megan Rapinoe on the field, Julie Ertz in a center, like, a lot of things happened in that game. And they walked out with a win. They walked out with goals. To me, job accomplished. You move on to the Netherlands. So yeah, it is kind of like, I feel like I'm also now kind of in the bubble.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Oh,
yeah.
That's nice. I want to be in that bubble.
Yeah, especially with the flat whites that are inside the bubble.
Exactly.
So you mentioned Rose Lavelle and Megan Rapinoe coming in the second half. What did you see from the two of them? Like, I think there's, like, the layman's view, which is me being like, you know, Rose looked pretty good. Megan maybe looked a little rusty, but, like, I'm trusting the expert here. Like, what did you see? Because those will be two key people if they're going to win this thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a lot more concerned about what Rose Lavelle looked like, honestly, and she looked fine, and the team looked better when she was on the field. Like, I feel like everybody's creativity went up a notch, right? And that's what's going to be really important. And so that's why I think everybody is looking to see what the starting 11 is going to be against the Netherlands, because if Rose Lavelle is ready to start, which the general vibe, I think that now the expectation is, like, yes, that was her little warm up. You got her on the field. We're good to go. So that's step number one. With Pino, like, yeah, the final touch wasn't quite there. But for me, the important part with her is that she was putting herself into dangerous spots. So the finishing touch wasn't there, but the instinct of where she had to be was completely unaffected from her time off. And so that to me is kind of like, it will come. The challenge is that she's not going to get the level of minutes where, like, it might come as quickly as you might hope. But I think the hope would be that it comes through the group stage. And then by the time you get into the knockouts, if she is needed to be called upon in that last 30, 20, 15, whatever it is, that she then has the touch.
When y'all are going to get pints after a match and you're chatting, when you do talk, like, about what does the U.S. need to do to win this World Cup? Like, what to you, what are those things? Like, if we see a win, what will have happened?
Good use of depth. And honestly, like, it's the mentality piece, right? Like, I think it is just understanding that the goals are only going to get harder. And so the finishing part is going to be really key, but it's really just hard to be like, well, you have to score your goals, right? Like, that is, if there is one takeaway from that game, right? That game could have been 5-0, but if you're going to miss one, like the PK, I think you just, Alex Morgan, I'm sure, has just let go of that mentally, right? Like, that's what you have to do as an elite athlete. But, like, Roosevelt is hitting the crossbar. Like, it is a matter of an inch. And so I think the scoring opportunities looked really good, but it's, can they, again, turn up the dial on being clinical on the finishing? And that's been one of the big narratives around this team since, I mean, honestly, over the last 4 years. So, which is wild, because you think about our attacking talent and it's like, you watch them in the NWSL and they're scoring goals like a million times a day, but it's just, can you tighten? Can you tighten it up? Can you tighten it up? And can you grow into this tournament? And that's a really hard thing, I think, sometimes for people to just kind of quantify, but that is kind of, you have to just peak at the right time. It's like any other sports situation, right? Like, you don't want to come in and then have it fall apart. You want to come in and grow into this tournament. And with so many new players, like Sophia Smith in the mix zone after that first game, admitting like, I was nervous. I think I will still be nervous in game two, and allowing players like that to have those emotions and then to work through them. Like, it only gets harder from here. Yeah.
What is the biggest thing that you notice, if there is a thing, in the difference of play between when you're watching a player in the NWSL and like the normal portion of a year versus when they're in the World Cup? Is it like that first touch? Is it kind of finesse plays? Is it moving? And is it nerves? Like, what do you notice that changes the most?
Yeah. I mean, I think just the NWSL is a more forgiving environment of just like, if you don't have a perfect first touch, you can usually get away with it. And here, that is not always going to be the case. It's especially not going to be the case against the Netherlands. So yeah, I think it is just, are you being as clean and as smart as you possibly can be? It is just like, you know, you have a step up from NWSL to international games to begin with, but then World Cup, like the margins become so much finer. And that's where, like, you know, I was at New Zealand, Philippines, and watching some of the kind of unforced errors that New Zealand were making. And it's just like, this is where you get punished. Like, Philippines is a debutante nation, right? This was supposed to be a game that, this was the game that New Zealand was supposed to win. And then they didn't. That's the World Cup environment. So it is just kind of, are you playing as clean as you possibly can? Because any mistake is going to potentially turn into a bigger situation than you could ever anticipate. And it certainly wouldn't be a situation in the NWSL.
What do you think about this Netflix doc? You excited for it? The one that's going to be coming out in September?
I mean, right? I
think it's a lot of pressure. That's what, like, yeah, when I mean, saw it. Did you see that announcement, Jess?
It was the most vague press release that I've ever seen, but I did see the announcement.
Yeah. I just was like, damn, if there's not enough pressure already, no one's going to be watching a doc.
Now there's cameras.
Crapping out of the crapping out of the World Cup.
Yeah, it is. But, I mean, but also it's a team that thrives off pressure, even though it's a new generation of players, right? Like, that is the environment. And that is the environment that's also, like, passed down. Like, the expectation is you win. Period. And so it's just another element.
When you see the packages and the interviews with players talking about how cutthroat camps are and how high the expectations are for them, when you're around other countries and other teams, is that just not something that other countries say about themselves? Or is there something, like, I always wonder, is there something truly special, about us? Or is that something that, like, the England players would say about their camps as well?
I think England would say, yeah, I don't think it's like a 100% across the board, because I feel like, you know, everything that I've heard about New Zealand too is that for them, it's a team that does not get a lot of time together, right? So I think, like, there are teams coming into this World Cup with very different approaches, just because for some of these countries, it's literally just like, we have to play together. The US doesn't have that problem. So there's that element. But I think for any, like, Germany would probably say, like, no, of course our camp is crazy, right? Like, what are you talking about? So are we special? Maybe, like, a little bit, but not like, but depth, I think, has always been the thing for the US. And that's what got Allie Krieger in trouble in 2019 when she said, we could put a B team through this World Cup. And that made a lot of people mad.
True, but made a lot of people mad. Yeah.
Yes.
All right, Meg, so it's 8:30 there. So you are on your way to your first flat white of the day.
Yes.
Okay.
Very
well,
much.
We will let you go flat white word, which is a new word, flat white, tour to flat white.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. This has been great.
A flat white's milk has the slimmest of microfoam tissues. You add just enough air and you're folding the milk, not so much air,
All right, that was Meg Linehan reporting live from halfway around the world, 40%
fully,
around the world,
yeah,
all the way around the world.
Fully 180.
180, okay, yeah. I was like, if she's all the way around the world, she's where we are. And then I was like, you know what, I just am not even going to play that joke. So a big thank you to Meg, who works for The Athletic, to give us a scoop on coffee in Australia and New Zealand, as well as the U.S. women's team and my favorite topic, the upcoming Netflix doc.
I'm very excited to watch
it. Yes. we are watching the making of it right now when we watch the U.S. Women's National Team. But then in September, we'll be able to watch what happened all over again with hopefully some inside scoop. That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, there's like a Netflix Inception thing happening. Did you ever watch the LFG doc on HBO that came out a couple of years ago?
Yes, we're female athletes, but we're so much more than that.
I thought that one was pretty well done. So if this one is anything like that one, yeah, I'm going to enjoy it.
I really thought you were going to ask me if I saw Inception, and I have seen Inception.
Ooh, yeah. Did you like Inception?
Loved Inception.
Whose subconscious are we going into exactly?
Big Chris Nolan guy. Me too.
Yeah, didn't like the next one. Forgot the name of it.
Interstellar.
No, that was before. The one after.
Tenet?
Tenet. Not a big fan of Tenet. Didn't think it
Never
really,
saw Tenet.
Didn't think it really held up. Very excited for Oppenheimer. You and I are both Barbie people. We've already seen Barbie. We're not going to bore you with that. Too much Barbie talk out there. But once we both see Oppenheimer, we'll report back on that.
Oppenheimer is definitely a movie that I will be watching on a long flight in the future.
Mm-hmm.
You are the man who gave them the power to destroy themselves. And the world is not prepared.
Oh, wait, we should thank everyone for helping us make this show. Jess, co-hosting and producing the show. Anya Alvarez, producing the show. Carl Scott, executive producing the show.
Joel Shupak, audio designing and sound designing the show. Meg Linehan, coming on the show to talk about the Women's World Cup with us. Thank you.
I think that's it. All right. Happy World Cupping.
Happy World Cupping.